drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Hula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm Anthony Ferretti. I'm joined alongside my co-hosts and partners in crime, Joey Dwyer and Leo Stauder. Fellas, how are we doing? It's another Thursday.
Feeling good. I'm so excited. We got some Bears football tonight. So as soon as we're done here, I can go home, get some wings, BOGO wings and beat-ups tonight. So we're going to go get a little bit of that original buffalo, and I'm going to have myself a good night.
I wish I was doing as well as Joey. We got some sad news in the sporting world this morning, which we will get to later in the show regarding Corey Crawford and the Blackhawks. And that just kind of put a sad filter on my day, but I'm pretty excited to be here talking sports with you guys.
That's good. Like you mentioned, there was some sad news of for Hawks fans, but it's interesting because we'll plan this show, and then all of a sudden on Thursday, there's going to be some sort of breaking news that happens, and then we got to discuss and say, hey, I think we should probably talk about that because that's going to have an impact on us.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get to it, but we got a couple other things to touch on first.
We do. Like, we've got three glorious segments, and then best segment in Sports Talk Radio, the Pick Six. But let's dive right into it, talking about the MLB playoffs. We are in the NL and the ALDS. Those are going on right now. Currently in the NLDS, the Braves have defeated the Miami Marlins 3-0. Dodgers trying to advance over the Padres. Houston absolutely dominating over Oakland, trying to clinch. And Tampa Bay has the lead over the Yankees 2-1.
And I don't know where you guys want to start, but I would love to start with Houston and Oakland, just because the Oakland A's beat Emilio Leo's beloved Chicago White Sox, and Houston has turned total heel in the MLB this year, with guys like Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman just bragging about how they don't care, that they cheated, and people are mad at them for it. And it is, I've watched two out of the three games thus far in this series, and it is almost as fun to root against Houston as it is to root for your own team, just because they are like so, they're like the Death Star. Like, nobody likes Houston this year. They've still got all the same guys from their asterisked World Series, and I hope that Oakland can come back and give them the business.
Yeah, it really seems like they are just playing into the villain narrative. We've seen Correa and Altuve where they're just talking a lot of smack about that, where those were the ones that got the most criticism with the sign stealing scandal, and now they know that everybody's kind of wants to see them fail. So it seems like they're playing with a chip on their shoulder in that regard. And the way things are looking, it is quite possible we could see them rematch with the Dodgers in the World Series, which that would be crazy to watch.
That would be, and you've seen with the Dodgers as well. They've been trying year after year to not only get to the World Series, but try and get that trophy to try and celebrate in Los Angeles, and they just keep falling short year after year. So who knows what will happen. But as you mentioned with the Astros, they're kind of playing that villain role, and you saw some of the players coming out on social media. They're like, you know, be mad at us all you want that we cheat and stuff, but we're still here. We're still living.
And I mean, that's such a conflicting thing to be like, yeah, we know we cheated, but you still can't beat us. And it's just like, it's so cocky, and it makes them so hateable, right? Like, if God forbid Houston beats Oakland and then they move on and maybe see the Yankees in the ALCS, that would be like a record-setting number of people cheering for the Yankees. And the Yankees used to be in this spot where, not for cheating, I mean, maybe unless you count like the A-Rod situation in the mid-2000s, stuff like that, but they've just been a team that people love to hate, similar to the Patriots or teams like that, just that are hated because of their success. And Houston has brought that to a whole new level. And I, like, personally, I'm rooting against them, and I hope they lose. I hope they get absolutely blown out of the water.
You mentioned it a little bit with the Yankees. It'd be, I guess, refreshing to kind of have them back in the championship run because they haven't really been there since they've had Jeter and Rodriguez, but now they're starting to build around those talented guys they have. Aaron Judge just smoking the ball, Giancarlo Stanton as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the pinstripes bring it home.
And did you guys see, this is like just totally an anecdote, but did you see Giancarlo Stanton's home run the other night? That was the most no-doubt home run I've ever seen. He teed off on that ball. I didn't even see the ball leave his bat. It just, I heard the sound. I was like, oh, well, there's another home run. But he is electric to watch.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want to pencil in the Yankees for the NLCS yet just because they have had some difficulties with the Tampa Bay Rays. And this has kind of been my favorite matchup so far because it is just your clash of the Moneyball Rays, a low payroll team that has just been getting players on low value contracts that have been exceeding the salary they make. And then you got the Yankees that just are buying and spending on huge free agents. So it is kind of like that, the Rebel versus the David versus Goliath type story where you have two teams with completely different philosophies going off against each other. And so far the Rays have the 2-1 series lead.
And the Rays have looked very, very good for a team that nobody really paid a lot of mind to coming into this season. They've got some great pitching. Their bullpen is super solid. And like you said, Leo, it's just a bunch of low-paid guys who have really come together and are giving it to the Yankees right now. So that's been another fun series. But my favorite series to watch thus far in the playoffs has been Dodgers-Padres.
Oh, and yes.
Even though the Padres are down 2-0, they are the most fun team in the MLB right now. I don't know why the MLB isn't posting Slam Diego everywhere on their social media. It's probably because Rob Manfred doesn't understand the concept of marketing players. But Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado are so fun to watch. It is ridiculous.
We've just seen this. They're hitting him out of the park here and there. And we've seen some of the coaches that were saying, man, they're up 12-4. Why are they hitting home runs? Well, you're in the big leagues. If you can't beat them, you got to be able to just play the fullest you can. You can't say, hey, can you cut us some slack? Like, it's the big leagues.
Like, right. Like the coach in Mighty Ducks said, not Gordon Bombay, but the other one, it's not worth winning if you can't win big. I just watched that movie. I can't remember the coach's name for the life of me. It's like something like Jack Kelly or something like that. But that's to speak to your point, like, yeah, you got to the big leagues. If me as, you know, a first baseman back in the little league, if I had taken some more time and really put in the work and then gotten to the big leagues, you're right. I'm going to hit the ball every chance I get. And the whole problem with baseball is these like gatekeepers who are like trying to keep tradition and don't want the game to change when the game's inevitably going to change. And San Diego is a huge like spotlight of what the game could be if the league let players be more of themselves, aside from, you know, the fun names they get to put on the back of their jerseys during Players Weekend.
Yeah, and I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is the perfect example of what the league could hope to usher in with this next generation, where he is just this fun young player that has tons of swagger, where it seems like every time he hits a home run, he just tries to do a more aggressive bat flip. And that's what this league needs, is more players that just bring attention to everything they do, where they just go big or go home every at bat they take. And Tatis, I imagine a team trading him for a veteran pitcher. Like, I would hate for my team to trade him.
Hey, but you know what? What I will say to your point, Leo, is James Shields is a good pitcher.
And he was a veteran presence in that clubhouse. We cannot forget that.
If Tatis is on the Sox right now, we would be playing Houston, no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, it's just offensively, it's just exciting to see those runs. And you mentioned it with the bat flips. I mean, they're just taking it, chucking it basically to left field after they hit the home run and trotting around the bases.
People get so mad about that where it's like, if you don't want them to bat flip, why don't you just strike them out? Like, that's my biggest argument with that. It's like, they hit a home run. Like, they deserve to celebrate for it. And if you don't like it, do better next time.
That's the Trevor Bauer perspective of the Reds. He's a big proponent of personality. And I just wanted to check with you real quick, Freddie, as your Cubs did fall to Miami Marlins, and then the Marlins got absolutely destroyed by the Braves. So I just wanted to check, make sure you were doing okay over there.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there. I mean, nice to see the team that eliminated your team out, but I don't know if you guys know this about me. I root for both Chicago teams.
Which is admirable of you, because I think the Cubs are just a group of scumbags. So I really admire your position, being able to appreciate a win for the city.
Because some people are like, oh, you're from Chicago, so are you north side, you south side? There was a post by Cam Meredith when he was on the Bears, ISU alum. He wore a jersey of half Cubs, half Sox. He's like, I can't choose, I got to rep my city.
That might be crossing a little bit of a line. Like, at that point, you got to pick one. But talking a little bit about the Marlins, where the team they lost to, the Braves, that's another team where they could make baseball fun again with some of their young players, like Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies. Like, those are some fun players. So this is what baseball – they're kind of lucking their way into a great scenario where they have some of their young talent performing at the biggest stage, and it feels like they just really haven't capitalized on that marketing.
And it's especially – they're performing on a big stage at a time where sports is at the forefront in – like our national conversation right now, because there's so much of it going on at one time. Baseball's got to find a way to stand out, especially in the playoffs, because we've got playoff baseball going on right now, and people are more concerned about regular season football. And so in the future, I'd like to see the league broadcast these players a little more. But, you know, we'll see how much longer Rob Manfred is in control, because with him in there, I don't know how much they're going to be able to do.
Oh, boy. And just giving a quick update, Astros are taking on the Athletics right now. It's a top of the ninth with two outs. Astros are up 11-5, most likely going to win that game as they've got two strikes. But that'll just about wrap it up for our baseball coverage. When we take a break, we're going to head to Chi-Town and take things to the ice. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, Leo Stauder with you. Just talked about the MLB playoffs and how that's starting to get into the championship series. But Leo, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, we had some breaking news for Blackhawks fans as Stan Bowman decided he didn't want to re-sign goaltender Corey Crawford after 13 seasons with the team, so he is becoming a free agent.
And that is news that I was surprised to hear, mostly because I was looking through the roster of goalies who could back him up, and I didn't see anybody that was that exciting, especially when we dumped Robin Lehner at the trade deadline. You would have thought that that was us making the move and committing to Corey Crawford for a couple more years.
I think that was what they were signaling at the time, but I think the pandemic really changed things with the flat salary cap and the other contracts the Hawks have to negotiate. I think that they just couldn't afford what Corey Crawford was probably asking. We saw they offered him a one-year, $3.5 million contract. It sounded like that was lower than what Crawford was asking for, so I think once they realized that might have been as high as they could go for Crawford while still being able to re-sign Dylan Strome or Dominic Kubalik. So I think this was just it's the pandemic really changed everything. I think the Hawks might have been planning to bring him back, but now with everything that's happened, something had to go, and this was the player they chose to let leave.
And looking at the goalies that the Hawks have on the roster,
not pretty.
Not pretty. We've got Colin Delia, who I've never been a fan of. I think he's a career AHL backup. Like in Chell, when you're playing and you've got the potential, that's where his potential falls for me. Kevin Lackinen or Lankinen, who is that? And then the only goalie who shows any promise is Malcolm Subban, who had a couple nice starts with the Hawks late in the season. He had a couple nice starts with Vegas last year before that trade. And then the Hawks also drafted Drew Commesso in the second round with the 46th overall pick, who is another goalie. But as a rookie goalie taken in the second round, I don't expect to see him in the league for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, you see rookies playing, but it's mainly forwards and defensemen that are trying to improve the team, like we've seen with Kirby Dach for the Hawks. But yeah, could the goalie that's 18 years old be too inexperienced to try and take on the league that is the NHL?
Yeah, with goalies, they don't want to do that. I don't know the name exactly, but he's going to play at Boston University, and it sounds like that's just going to be so he could mature both from a hockey standpoint and physically, because for goalies, it does take a lot to get ready. For the NHL, it's a lot different than forwards. So it's hard to predict, and yeah, they really don't have a successor for Crawford on the roster now. They did not send Malcolm Subban a qualifying contract offer, so he's now a free agent as well. I think they're still trying to negotiate that, but we've seen Jay Zawoski from 670 The Score in Chicago is reporting that the Blackhawks are still looking to trade for a goalie or sign one in free agency. So it just looks like they might be trying to find somebody maybe younger than Crawford to replace that role.
The problem with finding somebody younger is there are some big-name goalies who are on the free agent market, are going to hit the free agent market. You saw both Corey Schneider and Henrik Lundqvist bought out of their contracts in New York and New Jersey, respectively. And then with the big contract that Vegas just gave to Leonard. Robin Lehner, yep. You would expect to see Marc-Andre Fleury not in a secure position there. So those are a couple goalies who the Hawks could look at. Unfortunately, they are all
old.
They're old. So and it's just not a good situation for the Hawks to be in.
And with both Lundqvist and Fleury, I just feel like you're not going to be able to get either of them cheaper than what you were trying to get Crawford for at $3.5 million. I think the Hawks are just going to have to try to find some lowball goalie that they can just get for cheap, because All the goalies you'd want are going to be out of their price range, which is a very troubling situation to be in.
Yeah, because you could go with someone like Lundqvist or Braden Holtby, but they're older players, and you don't know how much longer they're going to be be in the league. Anton Hudobin also, I believe, trying to be a free agent. So trying to get a young goalie is going to be difficult. So they're really going to have to go hunting, maybe see if they can work with their farm system, try and get the Ice Hogs to make a trade somewhere in the AHL, then bring that goalie up.
And another problem with the Hawks cap space is there are a lot of interesting free agents on the market. Andres Athanasiou, one of the hardest names in the NFL or NHL, but one of the fastest skaters in the NHL, really didn't have a whole lot of success in Detroit, but I've always thought he was a good player. He is a free agent after the Edmonton Oilers didn't re-sign him. Kyle Turris got bought out of his contract. So a couple really solid players who could also add a little more physicality that the Hawks were lacking when they went up against Vegas. But those guys are also going to be out of the price range for the Hawks just because their cap space is so atrocious with guys like Brent Seabrook and Andrew Shaw, guys who have not been contributing to the team who are taking up so much of the cap space.
Yeah, the Hawks right now, they're an organization without a plan and really with no light at the end of the tunnel here. I really think it's going to get worse before it gets better, because this pandemic has hit them at the worst possible time where they were anticipating the salary cap was going to go up. That's why they added players on more expensive deals like Andrew Shaw and Calvin DeHaan, Ole Mata and Zach Smith. But then the cap didn't go up. So they thought they were going to have all this cap space, but then they didn't. So now they're in a horrible position. And I think now you kind of are just stuck because nobody else is also in a position to take on salary. So I think they just kind of got to wait out the clock here. And we've seen they weren't able to extend qualifying offers to Drake Kajula or Slater Koekkoek. So now they even have like their depth pieces are walking away because they're in such a bad cap situation.
And those are two guys that you just mentioned who were very important for the Hawks in their playoff
run.
Yeah. Drake Kajula was a massive part of the success against Edmonton, and Slater Koekkoek was able to hold it down on the defensive end. And so if those guys do both end up signing somewhere else, that's going to be a huge hole in the back end for the Hawks. And it's just, Leo, you're talking all this doom and gloom, and I'm really not excited for the season to start next year. I don't know how the Hawks are going to pull together a roster that's going to win 50% of their games.
Yeah, I think Gary Bettman said he's eyeing a January 1st start for the upcoming season. Also, Ole Mata, he also got traded earlier this week. They got rid of him, and he was someone that wasn't too productive during the regular season, but in the playoffs, especially the qualifiers, he really helped the team out and arguably Chicago's best defenseman.
I wouldn't go as far to say he was their best defenseman, because he got embarrassed in that Oilers series when he was on the ice, whenever he was on the ice against McDavid or Dreisaitl. I think at times he was a liability. They're hoping that Ian Mitchell can step into his role, which I think makes that trade okay. And in theory, that Ian Mitchell's ceiling is higher than Ole Mata's floor could be right now. So I think that's kind of what they have to do, is where they have to shed some salary and replace them organically with some homegrown draft pick talent, which they do have some good defensive prospects, but on the forward side, they really don't have much. And that's what's making this look even scarier, is where you lose a very good asset in Drake Caggiula, someone who could play on all four lines, play penalty kill, maybe on the second power play unit, and you don't have a replacement for him on the Ice Hogs.
And those depth guys like Drake Caggiula and Zach Smith, guys like that, are so important to a team's success, because you can only have your best forwards on the ice for like max 20 minutes a game. So you have to be able to field lines that can consistently contribute. That's what we saw with the Lightning this year, is their fourth line was on another level through the Stanley Cup final, and that really propelled them to success. And that's a lot of what the Hawks in the early 2010s had that made them so successful, with guys like Marcus Kruger and Dave Boland, guys like that who could really step up and contribute in crunch time. And so without those guys, Leo, you're right, we're really going to have to scrape the bottom of the barrel as far as the farm system goes. And it's going to be a really shallow roster for the Hawks that's going to see guys like Patrick Kane taking on 25 minutes of ice time a night.
Yeah, it's not that fun to think about. This is really sad. But, you know, maybe we could focus on one positive. I just want to go off real quick just about Corey Crawford and his legacy, because he was drafted in 2003. And that's a long time ago. And that was before Kane, before Taves, before Keith and Seabrook. Crawford had been there since the beginning, and they had high hopes for him for a long time, but his development took a while to happen. He was playing with the Norfolk Admirals way before the Ice Hogs, and he wasn't ready as quick as they thought he would be. And then in the 2008-2009 season, the plan was for him to be the backup to the newly signed Cristobal Huey, but the Hawks weren't able to offload Nikolai Habibulin in the offseason, so that put Crawford in the minor leagues for another year. And then in 2009-10, Antti Niemi was on the last year of his contract, so the Hawks went with him again. So it just felt like Crawford kept getting passed up in the organizational depth chart. It seemed like there might not have been a future for him. But then when he finally did get his chance in the 10-11 season, he made the NHL's all-rookie team and really didn't look back from there. I think he's probably the reason that series against the Vancouver Canucks went 7 games, where he stole some games for them late in that series to almost complete the comeback. He won the Jennings Trophy for best goals against average in the NHL in 2013 when he got his first Stanley Cup. Maybe could have won the Conn Smythe that year. And it just felt like he never got the respect. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of goalies, where he can't get no respect. But everybody around the league was always bashing him when talking about the Hawks. And he just always outperformed the other goalies he had to go up against, whether it be Tuukka Rask, Devan Dubnyk, Jonathan Quick, some very good goalies from this era. Crawford always stood tall. And he probably should have won a Vezina. It's criminal that he never even was nominated for the best goalie in the league. I really think when you're talking about best goalies in Blackhawks history, you have Ed Belfour, Tony Esposito, and above them is Corey Crawford. Number 50 should be in the rafters here. And that, for me, is fun to think about, that we got to witness that for so long. And I wish I would have appreciated more, because it just felt like he didn't get any respect from the fan base, from the media, that he was always kind of the scapegoat. And now that he's gone, I think people are going to realize that he looked so good in front of that defense last year. Now that we're going to see Delia or Lankinen or some other guy in front of this defense from the Hawks, you're going to realize how important Corey Crawford was.
And, you were talking about the flack that he was getting, especially in the past couple of years, and while he was dealing with his post-concussion syndrome, all that stuff, but he really fought to get back to a level where he would be competitive again, and I would not be surprised to see another team pick him up who is in need of a goalie and has a little bit of a cap situation who could thrive, because I think Corey Crawford, with a decent defense in front of him, still is one of the top 10 goalies in the league.
Oh, yeah.
I think he is going to be very, very missed in Chicago. And, Leo, you also were talking about how he was drafted way back in 2003. Just for context, to let us know how long ago that was, how old were you in 2003?
3 years old then? I was born, or 4 years old. I'm a 90s baby. I'm late 1990s.
90s, let's go.
I believe Freddie and I were both five.
Okay, wow, old guys. But yeah, this almost feels like, to make a corny movie comparison, this almost feels like the end of Toy Story 3, where Andy's giving away his toys to Bonnie.
Yeah.
Like, so the Hawks now, they've had their fun with Crawford, and now to see him go play for a team like maybe the Carolina Hurricanes, that could use a starting goalie and maybe see him win one more championship. That would just be really fun to see.
That would be so bittersweet.
The Hurricanes are making a case. They're a good team. We got Cam Ward from the Hurricanes, but he was nearing the end of his career. So not
he
really
was bad.
He was prime. Bad. We thought, oh, he won a Stanley Cup. He's a veteran goalie. We can get him. But you got to think of age, and it's crazy to think 2003 is when he got drafted.
And that was even before Uncle Dale Talon was the GM. That was Mike Smith was the general manager of the Hawks. So Crawford's lasted three general managers. He's played for, let me think about this. He's played for Dennis Savard, Joel Quenneville, and Jeremy Colleton as his head coach. He's been through a lot with the Hawks, and this really does feel like, he's the first, I don't want to say the first core player to go, because we've seen Hossa, we've seen Jalmerson, but he's probably the core player we've gotten to see the longest and now leave. So it's a sad day to be a Hawks fan.
It's an emotional day for sure.
You mentioned he is a good goalie. I mean, the way he played, sometimes it was frustrating to watch as a Hawks fan, because there would be some games he'd come up with clutch saves or shutouts to get the win for the Hawks, right, and he'd mainly be the reason they'd be in the game. But then there's some games where it looked like it was better off it being an empty net, because he was struggling a little bit. But you look at his legacy. He's played 13 seasons. He's won two Stanley Cups with us. And I believe he's the only Blackhawks goalie, not even Glenn Hall or anyone else could do this, to win two Jennings trophies and two Stanley Cups.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think he is the best goalie in franchise history, probably the most underrated goalie of this decade. I mean, obviously, if you're talking best, you're probably thinking from this decade, like, he's played the same time as Henrik Lundqvist, Carey Price, Marc-Andre Fleury, but he's right up there with those guys. And I think, especially after the third Stanley Cup, those were some bad Hawks teams that he made look a lot better, and I think he didn't get enough credit there. I think it took until when he was hurt with that first concussion, when we saw what Jeff Glass and J.F. Berube were doing in front of that same team, that you realized how important Corey Crawford was to the Hawks.
Oh, I remember J.F. Berube.
Yeah, that wasn't fun.
Dark times. And yeah, Crow will be missed.
Yeah, he will be missed. It. Who knows who's going to be in net for us. It's a dark time for the Hawks, but hopefully the future will be bright for them. That'll just about do it for our coverage for the Blackhawks. We're going to take a break. When we come back, news and sports guest Joe Kennedy will join us. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting.
How to get WZND Street Team today.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
You heard him, Barstool Big Cat, bringing it back to The Red Zone. Thank you so much for joining us. We are now joined by Joe Kennedy, who is in the newsroom, given all this setup that we have. So, Joe, can you hear us?
I hear you.
All right, perfect. And we always, as we mentioned, bring a news and sports guest on. They get to have a topic of their choosing. And given the Bears are playing tonight, fittingly, Joe, you wanted to talk about the Bears.
Yep.
And I think especially in the light of just everything that's going on, this Trubisky-Foles battle, because Foles didn't have a strong outing against the Colts. So some people are saying Foles is terrible now. Bring Trubisky back in.
I wouldn't say that, but first off, I'm going to say this. I'm convincing myself tonight that the Bears are going to win this game. At first, I don't think it was even possible, but slowly looking over everything, it can happen. And I think it can happen as long as the offensive line plays well. They can block because the defense on Tampa Bay is pretty deadly, especially that front seven. They got Vita Vea, I believe, and then Jason Pierre-Paul, Levante David, and then Shaq Barrett, who's also one of the best edge rushers. And the Bears' offensive line has been pretty atrocious, especially the rushing game. They haven't been able to do anything in the running game, and that's what Tampa Bay does so well on the defense. So I think it's just all going to come down to what Foles can do and what the offense can do and what the defense is going to be able to stop Brady.
And for the listeners, just to give you an idea of what the show is like being on, is Ferretti will print out our outlines for the shows, and he's got info and questions on here. And one of the funniest things on this sheet today is Ferretti put, could Foles out-duel Brady on the very end? And from what we saw last week, absolutely not. I'm on the train, Ferretti mentioned earlier, of bring Mitch back in. Because no, Joe, listen to me, hear me out, okay? So Nick Foles performed terribly.
Yeah.
And now we know that it's not a Mitch problem, it's a Matt Nagy problem. Matt Nagy's system is not working for the Bears, so why not at least let your quarterback, who might have the potential to be a starting quarterback in the NFL,
play. Like 3 years for that.
Exactly, but under Matt Nagy's system, which is not the system that is designed for him. Matt Nagy is too stubborn to change the way he does things to benefit his players. And so if we could make it to the end of the season, find Mitch a coach who will actually play to his strengths, let him run the ball more, let him have a more creative passing attack, then maybe he'll have the opportunity to actually show us what he's capable of. Because we've seen good Mitch, but Nick Foles has not looked good since he was in Philadelphia 2 years ago. He looked bad in Jacksonville, and he looked bad on Sunday. And if he performs poorly tonight, I am so okay with closing the Nick Foles chapter in the Bears' history. And I know that's a gut reaction, and I know it's just the dumb fan in me. But I'm just so frustrated with the Bears. And we're 3-1. We're 3-1, and I'm so frustrated.
You think Mitch Trubisky would have done better last week, or would have made the game last week against the Colts any different if Mitch was in?
Yes, absolutely. Because there were so many times when...
Did you see how he couldn't even get the ball off Foles half the time?
Because, so the Colts were coming in. They were crashing the pocket from the tackles, which left a gap up the middle every single time that Mitch would have run through. And obviously the Colts would have adjusted and stopped it. But still, that would have made them respect Mitch's ability to run just a little bit more, but Nick Foles was so stagnant in the pocket, he did not move at all, and the Colts D-line were just able to tee off on him, and they knew that we had to run the ball, so they were playing against the run. And then Matt Nagy, I think I counted 5 drives in a row where he started first down with a curl route, 5 times in a row, and it is just exhausting.
Well, you talked about the run game a little bit, where it feels like now with Tariq Cohen injured, that is just detrimental to the Bears' run game because Nagy was able to use him so creatively, and it just feels like he doesn't know what to do with David Montgomery yet, or at all. So it feels like the Bears don't have that little safety blanket for Matt Nagy to use where he could get some carries to Tariq Cohen. And now, so when the run game doesn't work early in the game, he just completely abandons it. And that's not how you win games in the NFL, is by abandoning the run game in the first half.
Do you think he's abandoning it because of the offensive line, or just,
I think that has something
to
do with it.
Yeah,
but I just feel like him and Montgomery haven't really clicked either. Where there's obviously potential there. We've seen where Montgomery can get off to these big games and has flashed the potential, but then it feels like the Bears don't always game plan best to use his skills.
And David Montgomery, we saw it at Iowa State, and we saw glimpses of it last year, is a great north-south back. He's so hard to bring down, and it just boggles my mind that Matt Nagy wouldn't continuously just run in between the tackles and pick up yards that way. And I understand that against the Colts especially, our offensive line was not getting any sort of positive push. But I just think that David Montgomery's talented enough to be able to push for 3 or 4 yards a carry, and that's all we need. Set up a 2nd and 6 for Nick Foles to be able to pass it. I just think that going away from the run is not the way to kickstart this offense, especially with a quarterback who is not as familiar with the system.
In 2018, we saw, though, that the Bears were able to run the ball with Jordan Howard, and it just makes you wonder, what were they thinking about just getting rid of Howard, who was productive that year and was a great tandem with Tariq Cohen? Like, they could do, what were they, Thunder and Flash? They had the power with Howard, and they had the lightning speed with Cohen. But this week, the offensive line's just going to have to do as much as they can because they're facing this Tampa D that's allowing only, like, 64 rushing yards per game, and they're averaging 3.5 sacks a week, so it's like you look at this offensive line, and that's just a lot of trouble because they can get to the quarterback and they can stop the run game. Their secondary is weak, and that's where the Bears are probably just going to have to exploit them.
And looking at changing pace a little bit, because I don't want to talk about the Bears' offense anymore. It's going to stress me out.
It's like the defense. That's what's going to win the game.
The defense, how do you think, like, what are some bright spots that you see in the defense that we're going to be able to exploit the Bucs' weaknesses and hopefully come out with a win tonight?
I think they're going to be able to exploit them because Buccaneers are pretty hurt tonight. Mike Evans is a game-time decision, I believe, and then Scotty Miller, because they're without Godwin, and then O.J. Howard's out for the year. So they're pretty injured on the – and Leonard Fournette's out, I believe, or he's questionable. So they're pretty injured.
Fournette's doubtful. McCoy's out. Miller's questionable. Evans is questionable.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's – the defensive side can make an impact on this game, but Tom Brady still can be Tom Brady and – just have a great game, and he can do it with any receiver, like Scotty Miller. Like, who's Scotty Miller before this year? Exactly. So
I think it was a big mistake that the Buccaneers got rid of Spencer Schnell.
Spencer Schnell is right up Tom Brady's alley. The small white wide receiver, that's the Danny Amendola, the Wes Welker, the Julian Edelman, that's the Tom Brady specialty.
I was just going to say he's a small wide receiver, but he's strong and really productive, that he's kind of like Julian Edelman. He would fit in perfectly with that offense.
Joe, you mentioned Chris Hogan. That was hilarious.
Lacrosse player. But let's talk about the red zone defense maybe for the Bears. That's like their biggest strength this year is when they've been getting the ball, or let's say this, they've been getting the ball deep inside their red zone on defense, but they're stopping them. They're bend up but don't break, and that's what they've been doing. But on the other hand, you got the Buccaneers, who have one of the best offensive red zones in the NFL. They score on about 80% of their trips with touchdowns, so it's going to be a big game in the outside, and I think that the Bears are going to be able to contend with them with Jalen Johnson and Kyle Fuller outside.
Yeah. And I saw a stat that Jalen Johnson and Kyle Fuller are 3rd and 2nd, respectively, in the NFL for completion percentage when thrown against. And Jalen Johnson's obviously the highest rookie. Mm-hmm. And so our corners have been playing some shutdown defense. And then obviously in the middle, you're set with Eddie Jackson and then Tashaun Gibson, who's also been playing very well. So the Bears secondary has looked really, really good. And then the front seven, even without Eddie Goldman, has been getting quite a bit of push.
That's been tough. Yeah.
So I have been thrilled by the defense, which makes the offense's lack of performance even more frustrating. But I think the defense has a really good chance to compete with any offense that isn't run by a guy named Patrick Mahomes.
But the problem just with the Bears' defense is they ask so much of them, where when the offense isn't getting the ball moving or is going 3 and out really quick, like, you're almost asking for the defense. You need them to get a couple turnovers a game and maybe even score some defensive points. Like, they're asking so much out of this defense that they have to play a near-perfect game in order to have a chance of winning.
Yeah, we've seen with their defense, Akeem Hicks has been someone that's stepping up. He's got 3.5 sacks for them this season. Roquan Smith, also a guy in the secondary. But you mentioned with the cornerbacks trying just to do everything they can, Eddie Jackson. But I think I agree that it kind of does take away from the offense, just kind of make it better that there's a bright spot. But I think if they can try and really get to Tom Brady's offense to try and collapse that pocket as quick as possible and take them down.
Yeah, I'm predicting a big, big game here for the Bears edge rushers with Robert Quinn and Khalil Mack. They've been doing pretty well this year. They've been getting their sacks, been making those tackles for loss, but I think they're just due for a breakout game, and I think it could be right here tonight on a Thursday night primetime game against the best quarterback to ever play the game.
I just feel like this feels like such a Bears defense game where they could really take it over, and that's just the shame with it, where it just feels like this is the same Bears team we've been watching since, you know, I was a kid, where it's they have a great defense, but then just so many questions on offense. But it's so fun sometimes just to watch where the defense can totally take over a game, and they have some electric playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. So that's why I do feel pretty confident in this team, where maybe they're not a legit 3-1. They are still, I think, one of the top teams in the NFC.
Yeah, you mentioned it with their defenses. That's how it's been in years past. It'd be really nice to see the defense step up and have as great of a season as they did in 2018, when it looked like we were going to make a deep run in the playoffs. But right when they acquired Khalil Mack, I remember waking up and seeing that trade. I'm like, oh my goodness.
And I just want to interject real quick, because Joe, you said very early when you were on that you would convince yourself that the Bears are going to win, and my dad texted me outraged that you said that.
All right.
He said I want the Bears to win too, but history says it'll stay close for three quarters. Then the exhausted
history doesn't always repeat itself.
He said then the exhausted Bears D watches Brady sail into the sunset with our W.
Ooh.
And I mean, he has a point, where the offense has not been able to hold sustained pressure and keep the defense off the field, and that's something that the Bears need to be able to do for this defense to play at their full potential, because you see in the fourth quarter where our guys will get so tired on defense just because they've been out there for 30 minutes already.
They've scored 49 points in the fourth quarter and only 33 in the first three quarters. They can't get it done. They got to play a complete game, because that's the only way you're going to win games. And you might not be able to play a complete game and get those two comeback wins against the Lions and Falcons, but that's not going to get you anywhere. That's an 8-8 team that you're going to finish. So ever since first grade, every coach tells you in a football game, you just got to play a full game, play each quarter like it's a different game. And Bears just got to look at that in a different way, I guess.
Yeah, we've seen it. Just Sports 101. You know, you play till the buzzer. You don't stop playing until there is a final in the game and the clock, in this case for football, hits double zeros.
And Joe, before we got to move on to pick six, I just want to ask you, because my roommate and I have this discussion all the time.
Okay,
so you wake up tomorrow, Ryan Pace is fired. And they call, the Bears call, it's good old Virginia McCaskey, and she calls. She's like 96 years old. She's like, I'm looking for Joe Kennedy. I need a new GM for the Bears. How do you fix the team?
Oh, my God. How do I fix a team? Wow. There's a lot of things that you got to fix. First thing that's most important is definitely the quarterback. I mean, we got two really good backup quarterbacks. Like, the best in the NFL are on our team. But that's what's most important. Also, first round, maybe draft like a offensive lineman. Definitely that's what's need improvement. But other than that, just really a quarterback, maybe a new head coach. You got to see what this year is going to end up like for Matt Nagy. It's really a make or break year for him. But other than that, I don't know what I would change right away, other than definitely get a new quarterback and get a new offensive lineman.
All right, you know, that's fair enough. I usually say we trade Mitch and a piece for Quentin Nelson. Don't know if the Colts
would. Why would you say yes to that if you're the Colts?
I don't know. Maybe they see an upside in Mitch. Philip Rivers isn't going to
trade.
Philip Rivers isn't going to be around for another 3 years. They need a QB. Jacoby Brissett's not the answer. Maybe Mitch is.
Maybe. And you want to find out who we think is going to win the game? You're going to have to tune into Pick Six, but that'll bring us to a Red Zone question of the week quickly. Who do you think is going to have the most fantasy points for the Bears tonight? Is it going to be Nick Foles, Allen Robinson, David Montgomery, or is it going to be someone else like the Bears defense? Are they going to step up and have a big game? Comment or vote for your guess. We want to hear from you guys, but when we come back, it'll be the best segment in sports talk radio. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
You can listen to WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation 103.3 WZND. It is the moment we have all been waiting for, the pick six. We are in week five, taking a look at the standings. It was a rough week for all of us, but leading at the top, leading strong, is Leo Stoddard and Joey, 17-7.
Feels good at the top, baby. Feels good at the top.
Then we got Steve C. C's right in the middle of the pack, 15-9. Then I'm coming in fourth at 14-10, and no surprise, Guest is at the bottom, 11-13.
Hey, if I know one thing about Joe Kennedy, though, he's going to go at least 2-4. Oh, at least. That's the floor. That's the floor. That's the floor for Joe Kennedy. Ceiling's 5-1. Ceiling's 5-1.
Well, we will see. Let's get right to it. Our first game is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Bears on Thursday Night Football. As much as I like the Bears...
Freddie, don't do it. Freddie, you know we're all picking the Bears. Just take the L with all of us.
I mean, I'm trying to play it smart here. I'm sorry, I gotta go Tampa Bay.
Ah, oh, Freddie, you're a coward. I'm going Bears all the way. I ride with my boys.
I, Joey, your text from your dad, it was pretty much what I wanted to say, that I think it's going to be one of these games where...
Leo, don't you do it. Don't you do it, not you too.
Joey, I'm so sorry, man. I'm sorry, but I have to. I think it really is. It's going to be where the Bears hang in there for three quarters, but their defense is just exhausted at the end, and they're playing against a pretty good quarterback on the other side. So I'm going to have... I hated this. I got to go with the Bucs.
Right. Joe, help me out.
Bucs are injured. Bears are booing. And they're going to come in firing here tonight. I think they're going to start off good, so I'm taking the Bears.
Thank God.
Alrighty. Steve Cease, he's going with the Buccaneers.
Well, of course he would. Dirty Lions fan.
Yeah, they're on the bye week, so, I mean, hey, they can get the win. Our second game, it is the Las Vegas Raiders against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'll tell you what, man. Like the Raiders, man. Derek Carr, man, he's amazing, but... I think Patrick Mahomes, man. You see this guy in the pocket. Chiefs, man. Knock on wood if you're with me.
I'm knocking on wood, Freddie. I'm going Chiefs as well.
Yeah, I'm going Chiefs as well.
I think it's going to be a Chiefs sweep here. Here we go.
Easy. Alrighty.
Unless
exactly.
Steve?
Yeah, it's a Chiefs sweep. He's taking Kansas City. Our next one is the Battle of Pennsylvania. Philadelphia Eagles against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I feel like the Eagles got lucky on Sunday night getting that victory over the Niners. I think Pittsburgh's going to run them over.
I think the Eagles are still looking for their identity. I think Miles Sanders is decent. I'm not like down on Carson Wentz as everybody else is, but I still think Pittsburgh's going to take this one.
I just really like the Pittsburgh defense, and just they got some really good playmakers on offense with Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner. I think they're just a much more complete team than the Eagles here, so I got to go with the Steelers.
Yeah, I agree with you. Shout out to my boy T Swarm. Go Steelers, baby.
Another sweep. Steve is also taking the Steelers. This next one, it is the Jacksonville Jaguars with the GOAT, James Robinson, against the Houston Texans. Houston Texans fire their coach. This is a bold pick. I think somehow Houston's going to get it done. Get their first win.
Jeez, all right. So Freddie's wrong on the Chicago pick, and he's wrong on the Houston pick. Freddie, they just fired their head coach. They have one good player on offense, and I'll tell you what, it is not David Johnson. So we are going to go with Jacksonville. Battle of the running backs, baby. James Robinson's getting it done.
Yeah, way to go for the Texans to fire Bill O'Brien after he trades their one of the top offensive wide receivers in the NFL.
And gets rid of all their draft picks.
Yeah, so this is an organization in shambles right now. I have to go with the Jaguars here.
Yeah, I agree. Absolute shambles out there in Houston. I'm definitely going Jacksonville as well.
Steve going Jacksonville as well. So I'm the outlier. I mean, I'm in fourth. I'm trying to see if I can play to win the game here.
That's smart.
Hello, you play to win the game. Now moving to Sunday Night Football. Minnesota Vikings, Seattle Seahawks. I mean, let's get in the kitchen. Keep letting Russ cook, baby. Seahawks.
Flick wrist, twist it like a stir fry, Seattle all the way.
Yeah, I think Russ Wilson might be the MVP this year. Seahawks by a lot here against a very bad Vikings team.
Yep, DK Metcalf all day, baby. And yeah, Seattle all the way.
Yep, Seattle all the way for everyone. As Steve is picking Seattle, then we get to our final game. It is the Monday Night Football game between the New Orleans Saints and the Los Angeles Chargers. Do want to take a moment, though, just to pray for everyone. involved in Louisiana because they are potentially looking to move that game, given everything that's going on with the hurricane. So prayers for them and hope everyone is safe. I think the Chargers did name Justin Herbert their starting quarterback, but I think somehow New Orleans can get it done.
Hey, last time New Orleans had a bad hurricane, Drew Brees came in and brought the city some light, and I think he's going to do it again. Drew Brees and the Saints all the way.
I was conflicted on this one because I do think the Chargers are a pretty good competitive young team, but I think it's so hard to pick a young up-and-coming team against a Sean Payton-led Saints team. They're just so complete, so well run, that I think the Saints are going to welcome Justin Herbert to the league in a rude way this week.
I don't know about that, because he's been welcomed in a pretty good way, passing for over 900 yards in the first three games.
Joe's
played.
Hitting me with stats.
Oh boy.
I don't know. I think he's still going to be good, but overall, I do think the Saints are still going to have the advantage in this one. Sean Payton went to Naperville Central, so let's go, Saints.
That's right, Naperville Central. I remember at a polo tournament in that school, and there was a trophy there, and it said Sean Payton.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. Steve is also going with the New Orleans Saints. So once again, I think that's a New Orleans sweep, if I'm not mistaken.
All right.
So we're all taking KC, all taking Pittsburgh, all taking Seattle, all taking New Orleans. Not much discrepancy, so we'll see if the standings can shift with some of the outliers. We'll see if Joey and Leo can keep their spot. Can the guests go 6-0? Could they go 5-1, 0-6? Who knows? How do you think you're going to go this week, Joe?
Joe's going
6-0.
You know,
looking at it, I'm either going 6-0 or 5-1. The only one that I'm really worried about is the Bears game.
Joe!
Oh, man, Joe.
Have some faith, brother.
I don't have faith. That's the only one that I'm, like, optimistic about.
I don't know, Joe. You sound pretty worried.
Oh, man. I mean, the ceiling you're trying to beat is 4-2.
Yeah.
That's how the best the guess has done so far this year. That was back in week 3, so we'll see what happens. As we mentioned, Tampa Bay and Chicago, they're going to kick off shortly. Both teams 3-1. Can the Bears improve to 4-1? Can Tampa Bay improve to 4-1? We will have to see. But with that being said, that will just about wrap it up for this week's edition of the Red Zone Podcast. Just to recap what we talked about, and we have some breaking news. According to ESPN, sources say that the Titans-Bills game could be moved to Tuesday. But anywho, just to recap, we talked about the MLB playoffs and how that is getting down to the... it's in the NL and ALDS right now. Then we talked about the Chicago Blackhawks and the sad news with the release of Corey Crawford and how the future is going to unfold for them. Then we talked about the Chicago Bears brought in Joe Kennedy, seeing if they're going to be able to beat Tom Brady as he comes to Chicago. Then it was the best segment of Sports Talk Radio. We finished with the pick six. If you missed any part of this podcast, you can go online to WZND.com, and it'll be there shortly. Also, don't forget to take part in our poll of the week. For everyone here in the Red Zone, I'm Anthony Ferretti saying so long. We'll see you next week.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.